Coming up on this edition of RCN Sports Talk, Eric Goldwein of the Washington Post and Hoop76.com talks about the Sixers' front office shakeup and future direction of this summer's NBA draft, along with D.C. high school lacrosse issues. Former Olympians Marty Notstein and Joetta Clark-Diggs discuss the Olympics, this summer's games in Rio, and their post-Olympic activities. We'll have details on a unique start to the Nationals' top minor league affiliate, plus interviews from the George Washington University baseball team and this week's big Parkland Liberty volleyball match, all coming up on tonight's edition of RCN Sports Talk.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to RCN Sports Talk. We're glad you could be with us. I'm Chris Michael. We have some great guests on a very special program lined up on tonight's program. And let's start leading off the program, joining us via the Skype lines. We're very happy to be joined by sports writer from the Washington Post and ESPN-affiliated Sixer website, Hoop76.com. Does a great job for both of those media outlets, Mr. Eric Goldwein. Eric, thanks for joining us on Sports Talk this evening.
Yeah, thanks for having me on here. A lot of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, I want to pick your brain and use your areas of expertise in a lot of different areas. I'll start with the Sixers because, quite honestly, I'm still shaking my head over last week's front office shakeup. Sam Hinkie resigns within a couple hours. Jerry Colangelo hires his son Brian to become the new GM. You know, with everything that happened, I think the timing surprised me the most, although maybe in hindsight I should have kind of expected this coming, but what about the timing, everything that happened, especially just days away from the start of an offseason that could be their biggest offseason in years?
Yeah, I think you got that pretty much right here. If we were to read between the lines, this didn't happen last week. This happened December when they abruptly brought in Jerry Colangelo. Jerry Colangelo's as powerful a guy as you're going to find in the NBA. He's got connections to owners, to agents. He's got connections to the commissioners, and it started in December. One minute this is Sam Hinkie's team, the next they're having a press conference with Jerry Colangelo, Sam Hinkie, Josh Harris, and you could kind of see things start to change a little bit within maybe a week of when they brought in Colangelo in December. They traded, they were 1-30 at the time. They traded for Ish Smith. Mm-hmm. That didn't feel like a Sam Hinkie move. They also signed Elton Brand, who is the opposite of every young prospect that they've been bringing in. Mm-hmm. And they brought in a Jerry Colangelo coach and Mike D'Antoni to help out Coach Brett Brown. And you can kind of see things start to turn a little bit. But even that said, I, like you, was surprised that with three games left in the regular season, heading into an offseason where they have three, maybe four first-round picks, as much cap room as you could possibly want. This was going to be the summer of Sam, and then he steps down like that, and then within an hour of when we find out he steps down, we learn that Brian Colangelo, Jerry's son, is taking over. It's fascinating and interesting. It's bizarre. It's something.
It certainly is. It gives us something to talk about in the media, at least. What are your thoughts on Sam Hinkie's legacy? Is it something that we probably won't really know for a couple years from now? I mean, if the ping pong balls work out and they get three, and if the Lakers could have been a little better, they would have had four draft picks, top draft picks, as you said. But will we ever find justification if this system actually worked and if Sam Hinkie should get the credit?
Well, I think Sam Hinkie would tell you himself not to judge his legacy about not to let where the ping pong balls land impact mm-hmm. his legacy. Yeah. Honestly, the people that like Sam Hinkie are going to look at this 5 years from now and they're going to point to all the draft picks they had, and they're going to say, wow, this guy, and count me among those people, by the way, but they're going to say, wow, this guy really did know what he was doing. The people that don't like him, are they going to look at the Sixers, and inevitably they're going to improve. There's, oh, I said this last year too, but there's really nowhere to go but up. But they're going to look at an increase in wins, they're going to be like, they got this guy out of here, all of a sudden the Sixers start winning, and they're going to say that's because Sam Hinkie didn't care about putting together a winning team. Mm-hmm. And it's really an unknown. We will never know. I have my thoughts on it. I think that a lot of the stuff he did, if your goal is to build a championship team, the way you build a championship team is you acquire superstar players. And the best way to acquire superstar players in the current structure of the league, which incentivizes losing, is to get those players through top picks in the draft. And it wasn't very complicated what they were doing. I mean, they were also investing in other areas. They were also, they had eyes around the world to try to get any little edge they could as far as scouting. They they developed a sports science program. They're building they're about to unveil a very nice Camden-funded practice facility and that'll unveil next season. But we'll never really know. It's nothing about this is ever conclusive.
Now, on your website, you posed a great theory, I think, that makes a lot of sense. And you're only the second person in the media that I've heard actually say this, but I think it has a lot of value. As far as the Sixers using this as a step to being sold eventually, could you kind of summarize your idea? And why aren't more people talking about that idea? Because it does seem to be that could be what they're leaning towards here.
Yeah, well, there was actually reports that popped up. It might have been in January. It was after the Colangelo news. Josh Harris, he bought the team in, I might be getting the year wrong, but at around 2011, 2010, he bought it for, what, $240 million. He's a hedge fund guy. He bought it with David Blitzer. And they're very smart people. This investment has already at least tripled. If he sold the team right now, it might be worth it. He might get $1 billion off of it.
Wow.
But the theory here is that, and again, it's just a theory and it's just speculation. I don't have any sources linked to this. Mm-hmm. But when you bring in a guy like Colangelo, who is very connected, again, to important people, who has connections with the commissioner, that looks good to a lot of prospective buyers. It looks good if you have a face on this that people might find more appealing. Given the timing of everything, and given that there have been reports that he's a guy that is interested in, at some point, buying an NFL team, he's got various interests. It would not surprise me if this was step one to him selling, at some point, selling the team and making a lot of money off of it.
Yeah. One of the rumors we've heard off and on throughout this past 76ers season was trade rumors involving Jahlil Okafor. Do you think they were legit, and do you think that's something that goes away now that Hinkie is no longer with the organization? Or do they stick around, and might they actually try to move him ahead of the NBA draft?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting what they do with him. I mean, it's very clear that they lack talent in a lot of places, but the center position is not one of those places. Okafor is, and again, he's only 20. He did some very impressive things in his rookie season. He did some very worrisome things in his, both on and off the court, in his rookie season that are probably typical of a 19, 20-year-old rookie playing professional basketball for his first year. It wouldn't surprise me if they try to move it. And I think that those rumors were, there was truth to them to the extent that when the NBA trade deadline happens, pretty much every name comes up in conversation, minus your Stephen Curry's, minus your LeBron James, minus your Kevin Durant's. But there's people, managers just feel, just kind of get a sense for who's interested in who. And if you look at the Sixers, you'd be pretty foolish to think that whether Colangelo was in charge or whether Hinkie was in charge, that either of them thought that there was a scenario where Okafor, Nerlens Noel, and Joel Embiid could coexist on the same winning basketball team. So, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he was traded. It wouldn't surprise me if Noel was traded. And everything's fair game.
And speaking of Joel Embiid, have you heard any news about him? That seems to be another big mystery. Is he healthy? Can he play someday? Dario Saric's another big question. Will he come next year? Will he come 2 years down the road? Any news on those guys? And any thoughts you have about Nerlens Noel and some of the other projected future pieces of the 76er ball club?
Yeah, let's start with Joel Embiid here, because he, in my eyes, is kind of the symbol of the Sam Hinkie era. So again, they took him third overall in 2014. This is a guy who was a highly touted recruit, and then at Kansas, he just erupted. He went from he became the consensus number one overall pick until a few days before the draft, where he had the surgery. And all of a sudden, he slid to number three. Andrew Wiggins was gone. Jabari Parker was gone. And Sam Hinkie is on the clock. And they have the option of taking this guy who might be anything from Hakeem Olajuwon to Greg Oden. And they decided to take that risk. And it's now been 2 years. Indications are that his recovery is going well. This is round here. He's had two surgeries. He's been in Qatar doing some advanced, I don't even know the specifics of it, but he went to Qatar twice for rehab assignments. And now he's back here, and he looks like he's getting there. He looks like he's as close to healthy as he was last January. We'll see how it progresses, because if he's a guy that can, and again, it's not I'd call it at best 50-50. It's not an easy task he has ahead of him, but if he can stay healthy, he is as talented a prospect as they come. A lot of this hinges on his health, which is uncertainty, which people want to avoid, Hinkie, it didn't scare him off, and it might be what people look back on and call him a success for, and it might be what people look back on and call him a failure for.
Mm-hmm. Last Sixer question for you. Ben Simmons is the guy that I really like. I can't imagine if the Sixers get the number one spot, they would pick someone other than him. Do you agree with that? And what happens if a doomsday scenario and that the Sixers don't get the top couple picks? Who do you think they would try to target with those remaining picks or the lower draft picks, should they not get the top number one or number two spots?
Yeah, so I wouldn't. I think Ben Simmons, I think he will go first or second. The other guy that you shouldn't rule out is Brandon Ingram. You probably got a glimpse of him at Duke in the tournament. I think it's kind of a 1 and 1A, at least at this point I do. Last year I was saying similar things and I was very wrong. So the point of that is you just don't know how to judge these things. You can't have much certainty about these things before the draft. But yeah, I think you're right that Simmons is kind of the top tier, and then Brandon Ingram. If it's after that, and you call it a doomsday scenario, it's kind of a 50-50 shot, and that's with them doing pretty much everything in their power to tilt their odds their way. So it's a very real, and Sixers fans should prepare for this scenario that they don't end up with the first pick, they don't end up with the second pick. You can flip a coin and it could be tails twice in a row. It's not an improbable type thing. After them, there's a guy. Dragon Bender. He plays for Maccabi Tel Aviv. He's a big guy, which will I'm sure make a lot of these Sixers fans happy. But he's very talented. We got Buddy from Oklahoma, who you got a chance to see. I don't think he's a top five pick, but I think he's somebody they might that teams are interested in. Jamal Murray from Kentucky is a very talented shooter. Mm-hmm. There's guys out there, and who knows, another star might be in there that's on nobody's radar. In fact, that's not an unlikely scenario.
Our special guest is Eric Goldwine, a major contributor for ESPN's affiliated 76er website, hoops76.com, and also a sports writer for The Washington Post. Speaking of The Washington Post, Eric, congratulations to you and your colleagues at The Washington Post for doing a great job on your All Met sections. I saw that. It's also available online. You guys just did a phenomenal job covering a ton of great winter sports topics, great articles on the players themselves, some great pictures as well. I know that's a lot of work for you. What's it like putting that all together, and what are some of your thoughts about this past high school sports season in the DMV region?
Yeah, well, it's not as hard as the athletes are, especially those top-tier athletes. It's a task. There's a lot of tough calls, but we got I think 7 or 8 person staff that it's kind of covers each of their area in Virginia, in Maryland, in D.C. Talks to a lot of the coaches, goes to several games a week. That does their research, and it's research consists of watching basketball games, going to a hockey game. So it's not the toughest task there is. The challenge, of course, is getting it perfect, which there's no such thing. It's a very subjective, arbitrary exercise. But we try to get the right one. And then if you browse the basketball teams, if you browse all these sports, these are names that are going to pop up in a few years, not as local high school athletes, but maybe if you saw Villanova a week and a half ago, Josh Hart, he was a guy that went to a local school here, went to Sidwell Friends. He was a big part of that. Chris Jenkins, he went to Gonzaga. These are guys that have been doing big things, not to claim them, but these are guys that will likely go on to do some special things that'll get more of the national spotlight rather than the local high school scene.
Mm-hmm. Right now, of course, your area of expertise down in D.C. is covering the lacrosse season. Could you just touch on some of the top players and teams that you've seen and give us a heads up on what are some of the big matchups coming up in the next few weeks?
Yeah, and so we got the D.C. The area is kind of funny in that we got some really stacked private schools. On the boys' side, we have Landon and Gonzaga. Again, these are schools that you'll probably recognize for their basketball, for their football accomplishments. A lot of these schools a lot of these private schools are not just highly ranked in this area, but they're nationally recognized. Last night we actually just had our number 2 and now number 1 team, Gonzaga, beat Landon in an exciting game that we had coverage at. In the girls' side, we have a Good Counsel, who's one of our top teams. Every single starter in their lineup is headed to a Division I school. I think they had something like 17 or 21 of them, and they're very, very talented teams. Bishop Ironton is another one from Virginia, and they're at a very high level, and they're fun to watch. They're, again, names you'll see them in the tournament if you're a lacrosse fan, you'll see them in a couple of years in the Final Four or just on any game there. It's very competitive in this area.
Eric, thanks so much for joining us, for sharing all your insights, and being our first ever Skype guest here on RCN Sports Talk. We appreciate it.
All right, hope it went well. Thank you.
We appreciate it very much. Eric Goldwine, outstanding sports writer for the Washington Post and the ESPN-affiliated 76er website, hoop76.com. Eric, again, thanks for joining us. And continuing on with tonight's edition of RCN Sports Talk, we are honored to have our next in-studio guest here. Among many titles, they are Olympians and great careers, of course, with great stories to tell. We're honored to bring in Mr. Marty Knobstein and Joetta Clark-Diggs. Thanks so much for being with us, and welcome to RCN Sports Talk.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I don't know. There's so many stories to talk about, and especially now because we're starting to see the advertisements for the Rio Games starting to ramp up, and there's starting to be excitement for this year's Olympic Games. So my first question to you is, as multiple Olympians, you've been in so many different years and so many competitions, do you get a little extra excited right now, or do you get nostalgic as we approach this year's Summer Games?
All right, you can answer that. Ladies first.
Thank you. Both. I get excited to see how Team USA is going to do, and then nostalgia, I was once there, and how are they going to walk in, what will they have on, what will the opening ceremonies look like, what will the theme be, so, and then I kind of reminisce on what my opening ceremonies look like.
Yeah. Marty, how about for you?
Yeah, absolutely, when the, advertisements start gearing up, and, and I'm lucky enough to direct a sports venue right here, so I'm always around a lot of Olympians who are going and preparing for the games, but once you start seeing the advertisements pick up, you realize that the games are right around the corner, and likewise, you live back, you live the memories that you had there, and, I'll tell you one thing, as an athlete, those 4 years in between the games can be rather long, but now that I'm retired, those 4 years blow by really quick. It's like, wow, it's another Olympic cycle already. But, everything comes in force as an Olympian. And, I'm such a fan of the Olympic Games. I'm such a fan of the U.S. athletes. And I just want our athletes to go there and really have a great performance. Yeah.
And you were telling us before we came on the air here, you wanted to be an Olympian before you even knew which sport you wanted to be in.
Well, yeah, I have, memories of a little kid watching the games and, just knowing that the Olympics were such a special event and, somebody getting a gold medal in the national anthem playing was something that just, I remember clearly as a 4 or 5 year old kid. And I remember standing on the sofa at home and acting like I'm getting a gold medal, and my brothers and sisters telling me, you're crazy, you're never going to be Olympian, what's wrong with you? And just knew the Olympic Games were special. And, as everyone knows, when the Olympics are playing on TV, I mean, most households stop what they're doing and they become fans of, of all the Olympians, no matter what sport it is. Mm-hmm. And that was the same thing in my household. So I knew it was a very, very special event, and I knew I always wanted to be a part of it. I just had no idea cycling was going to be the avenue for me.
Joetta, we'll start with you. What was your first Olympics like? As I said, you both were in many Olympics, but what was the first one like for you?
Well, the first one was in 1988, and that was a time when the Iron Curtain was there. So I did well making the team for the USA, but I was so far off the mark time-wise that I was just happy to be there. So for me, that year, it was great. I was sightseeing. My mother was there. My brother was there. And I had a great, great time. Opening ceremonies were great. The USA team did okay, but it wasn't somewhere for me to go that I knew I was trying to get a medal or even trying to make the finals. At that time, my best time was 1:58. They were running 1:55. So I was just so far off the mark. I was just happy to be there. Yeah. And soak it all in. But I got a taste of it. And so getting the taste of not liking just being there, those next 4 years, I kind of turned to the philosophy on my training and why I was going to go to the Olympic Games. I didn't want to just be there anymore. I wanted to be in the finals and go after getting a medal.
Yeah. Marty, what was your first one like? And did it get easier being back a second and third and so forth? Times?
Well, for me, I was an alternate in 92. I raced in 96 and won. I always say this, I lost a gold medal in my event. In track cycling, it's one-on-one. It's like a boxing match or a wrestling match. You win a gold medal and someone will get the silver medal. You can win a bronze or you get fourth. So, I lost a gold medal in 96 in a photo finish that took 15 minutes for the cameras to figure out who won the race. So for me, the road to 2000 was something that, I'm going to cherish for the rest of my life because I left determined. I left, angry that I let down, my fans, my country by not winning the gold medal. And I went into the event as a world champion. But, I could not wait to, go back those 4 years later. And it came around. I was fortunate enough to win the gold in 2000.
Which was harder then, to get the Olympics that first year or to stay there? Because you both had an extraordinary level of success for many years.
I was the top of the game for over 20 years because, as you know, the Olympics every 4 years. So, and I'm getting older. And I made my last team in 2000 when I was 38. So for me, I got better. It became a business for me. And the training in between, I had gotten so much better, it was fun now. Mm-hmm. Before, I was going to just do it and get out of the sport and then move on. But no, it was great. It was hard to stay at that level for so many years. But I enjoyed the competition. I enjoyed the training. Had a great coaching staff. And it made that a little bit easier. But the competition got tougher. Yeah. And the tougher the competition got, it brought the best out of me.
Yeah. Marty, you had to endure injuries, too, as your career went on, too. Yeah, I've been
unlucky a few times and fallen off my bike and broke some bones and had to race with, you know, some injuries as well. But, as an athlete, you prepare, you know what, especially at this level, you know, you know what needs to be done. And, you know, and you do have great trainers and you have great coaches and you have great staff around you keeping you healthy. But, you know, once you're at the top, you know, there's no easy day. It's not like you want it and you're on top of it. Now I'm going to rest and take it for granted because, yeah, there's 100 guys or girls behind you. You know, they're ready to, you know, swipe that gold medal off your neck in a heartbeat. And they're training every day to beat you. And, you know, and I use that for motivation. I used to show up every single day thinking, hey, I'm the best in the world. No one's taking it from me, you know, and I'm going to train harder than I did even last year as world champion.
And as we get older, we train harder and smarter.
Definitely smarter.
And so, and that's a good thing. That's why I was able to stay in the sport for a long time, and as you were too. And the young kids don't sometimes understand that.
Yeah. And one thing she said was, you know, having fun, being on top and having fun. And that's the greatest feeling in the world. When you're on top of your game, you're winning and you're having fun because, you know, you have it figured out at that point. You know what you need to do to prepare. You know what you need to do to run fast or ride fast. And, you know, and that's when you're having fun because you go into competitions confident, knowing I'm prepared, knowing I'm going to have great results. And that's when cycling for me became the most enjoyable was, you know, when I know, all right, I'm going to do these 7, 8, 9 races and I'm probably going to win them all if I'm prepared properly. And, you know, if I do everything right and push myself harder, we're going to have some good results. And that's when it's fun. You know, there are some long plane rides we talked about earlier where they're not very fun when, you know, you didn't have a medal in your bag going through the security line. So, you know, when you have the medals, it's a lot more fun.
Our very special guests are Olympians Marty Nostein and Joetta Clark-Diggs. We're going to take a break and be back and get more of their thoughts on their careers and the Olympics. Time for our first time out of the evening. And it was an interesting start for the Washington Nationals top minor league affiliate playing their home opener in another state and missing virtually the entire first week of their regular season. Our Sports Talk cameras caught up with members of the Nats AAA franchise to get their thoughts on their unique start to the season.
Well, I think everybody's handled pretty well. I mean, you know, we showed up in Syracuse. There was 5 inches of snow on the ground, and we didn't get on the field. So we had to do a lot of work indoors, and, you know, we had an indoor facility to go to, and pitchers got their work, and they were able to get outside and throw and get off the mound, touch the mound. And, you know, we did a lot of hitting the cage, pitchers, in position players. So we did what we could to get ready, and I think it was great today that, you know, Lehigh and, you know, the Lehigh Valley staff you know, everybody involved gave us the opportunity to come down here today. I know it's good to play. And
yeah, it was a little wild. You know, you always want to start on time, especially because you get excited for opening day. And we were worried we weren't going to be able to play for, you know, 4 or 5 days. But luckily we got a chance to come here and play some baseball, and it was a lot of fun. A lot different. You got to, you know, wear many, many layers, heat warmers, you know, anything you can. Fans in the dugout that can blow heat on you and just try to stay warm, stay loose, and make sure you're ready to play. I think it's hard to get started before the game, but once you get started, I think it's all right. You know, you got a lot of adrenaline playing, especially because it's the first game of the year and you haven't played in a while, so you know you're ready to go and you're ready to get out there. But you know, coming out and before the game, you gotta make sure you get on the bike or in the hot tub, whatever you need to do to get ready.
We like the club we have. You know, I think we got a lot of good pieces in place. I think we got a nice mix. You know, we have some, you know, kids who are still trying to, you know, climb the ladder and get to the big leagues, and we have some guys who've been around a little bit and they're trying to get back. So it's a good mix. I think the atmosphere is really good right now. You know, it's early yet, but you know, they seem to be blending well. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk. Our special guest joining us again this segment, Joetta Clark-Diggs and Marty Norpstein. And we'd like to bring in another special guest here, who is the 2014 Hershey's National Champion in long jump for her age. She also happens to be the daughter of Joetta, Talitha Diggs. Thanks for joining us here.
Thank you.
To RCN Sports Talk. I got to ask this question first and foremost, though. There's a long line of family traditions with the Olympics here. Do you have aspirations one day of maybe participating in the Olympics?
Not particularly. It's not something I like, you know, strive for particularly. If it happens, it happens. That's going to be great, you know. But I have different goals, you know. I'm looking in the finance, you know, just a bunch of other things that I'm really interested in.
Yeah. And what was your distance, by the way, in the long jump, the national record, you say?
Well, the standing long jump, I jumped 8.5, but when I ran and jumped, I jumped 17.3.
Yeah. And by the way, you're in eighth grade right now.
Yes.
And that you set that 2 years ago.
Yes.
Wow. So, you know, you have a pretty good instructor here. A guy in the way, too.
And very good genetics.
Yeah, but they don't listen to their parents as
true.
Parents.
Yeah. That is true.
You mean an Olympian, you don't have a little more say than?
I would like to think I do, but I don't. We have I'm a four-time Olympian. My sister-in-law is a five-time Olympian. My sister's a three-time Olympian.
Yeah.
And all our friends are Olympians. So she tends to go to non-Olympian people to listen to. Like she's actually not my coach, surprisingly. Yeah. But, different.
Now, you both, in addition to track and field, you both are working in the community. I want to ask all three of you about your community events, but you have a camp coming up, too, I know you'd like to talk about. So, Talitha and Joetta, could you talk about that camp and what's it like working together on it?
Well, it's my 16th year of the Joetta Clark Diggs Track and Field Camp, and it's at Easton High School this year. It's a camp for kids 7 through 18 from 8 o'clock until 12 o'clock at Easton Area High School. And we do a great job. Talitha, she can tell you what she does, but she is a camper, but she also helps out.
Yes, couple camps back, I would like pass out the lunches. Mm-hmm. This camp, I like just kind of look around, you know, let my mom know what's going on around. And it's a really good experience for kids to get a chance to, you know, meet new people, learn new skills, and it's leadership builder. I think it's a great camp to go to.
Yeah, and I know, Joetta, from past experiences of talking, you talk a lot about sports, but you also talk about how things you learned in sports apply to life.
Yes, at this camp, we also have homework assignments. They learn about believing in themselves and leadership skills, and we have a towel I gave you that says eliminate excuses, and then that's one of the themes of our camp. So we do a really good job at the camp, and it's, again, from 8 to 4, and we take limited people. We try not to overload. But we try and make sure that we cater to everyone and we make it affordable for everybody. And I enjoy, and I'm there. A lot of my Olympic friends are not at their camps. They laugh at me. Talitha does a good job with the kids, and she passes out things, and she registers the kids. And I like seeing her get involved with what we do.
Mm-hmm. And Marty, I know you have a book out here. I might as well put this up, too.
Yes.
When I cover my face, our ratings go up, too. So thank
you can cover that face, too.
The Price of Gold, which is a great read. And I know one of the things in it that you stress about is not only giving back to the community, but teaching the young people teamwork.
Yeah, and you know, for those listening, I mean, the camp that Joetta is talking about, I mean, if you're in the area here or you're a local person, I mean, if there's any opportunity you can learn from Olympians, so I encourage everybody, take advantage of a camp like this. To learn from the best in the world in your own backyard is something that doesn't come every day of the week. And, you know, I'm lucky enough to, you know, as I said earlier, run the Valley Preferred Cycling Center right down the street here. So, you know, we do a lot with community programs. And my story was, you know, I lucked in the sport of cycling. I did not grow up wanting to be a cyclist, but we have these community programs offered to the kids of the area, and they're free of charge. So, you know, cost is not an issue. We just want you to come with a good attitude and open mind to give cycling a try. And so far, since these community programs have been developed, we've put an Olympic team member on every team since the 1984 Olympics. So, you know, we have a great success and a great track record there, you know, including myself coming through these programs. But we have a lot of great programs for kids and adults as well. So, you know, the velodrome can be a little bit intimidating. You know, it's a banked oval. It's 28-degree banking, but it's actually a very safe environment. And we have great coaches as well. So, you know, I always try to encourage the youth of the valley and the area, you know, participate, make good decisions, create great habits, and when you have opportunities to, you know, attend camps, you know, really run by some outstanding individuals, as I went through football camp as a young kid, and I still remember to this day what the professional athletes told me. This is what you have to do, and you know, it's just great to have this, you know, this sort of a, you know, mindset around you at a young age.
What's it like for all three of you to give back and contribute to the community? I mean, the both of you can rest on your laurels, and Talitha, you can be playing video games or hanging out with your friends or doing whatever you want. But what's it like, and how important is it to you to interact with the community and to give back?
Well, I mentioned through my foundation, and I have to speak next, is that the foundation I have, the Jordan Clark Day Sports Foundation, focuses on nutrition, life skills, obesity, and we've done that for 16 years. So for me to give back to the community, I believe to whom much is given, much is required. That's why I do that, and it's important for me to show Talitha that women can lead, we could be in business, and so that's why she comes on board.
Yes. I think it's great really just give back to the community, because there's some people that may not, you know, have some knowledge that, you know, my mom and, you know, professional cyclist would have. So I think that it's cool that they get to, you know, learn from it and just take it in and use those skills in life. Like, I went to a camp not too long ago, and I actually remember the exact words that the coaches told me. So that really can stick with you throughout your whole life, like you said, with his football camp. So. Yeah.
And Marty, I know we were talking before we came on, about a year and a half ago, you kind of led your name to a great youth program that's going on.
Yeah, I have. And I also did that. I've done that with USA Cycling as well nationwide. But for me, you know, this is my community. I was born and raised right here in the Valley, and, you know, it's very important for me to give back to a place that's given me so much. And you know, everything I've earned and done in the world of athletics was accomplished right here in the Valley, and you know, and I still call it my home today. And you know, and there were times when I could have lived anywhere and trained anywhere, and I've always came back to the Valley, and it was for a reason. It's because you know, it's always been home to me, and it's got you know, everything you need to be an Olympic champion. I'm living proof of that. And there's some cold winters, but you know, there's also some beautiful rides around here, and there's also, you know, I've said it, you know, there's a blue-collar toughness, grittiness to a lot of the athletes here in the Valley, and it's something that I think there's a lot of great people out there who could also become Olympians.
We only have a couple minutes left. I want to kind of pick your brain and ask, besides cycling and track, when the Olympics start in Rio in a few months, what will you be watching? What excites you the most to watch as an insider and knowing what goes on behind the scenes? What do you like to watch?
You want to go first?
Oh, okay. honestly, I like track. Obviously, I like track the most, but yeah. I also like swimming. I think that that's cool. Like, I remember, I think it was like 2008 when they had that finish touch and United States wasn't supposed to win. I was like screaming that. That was a great moment. So,
and for me, I like watching the gymnastics and swimming as well. And I tell people, I'm going back to my camps as well, we're not trying to make you to be Olympians. We want you to be the champions of your life. So when I'm looking at these Olympic Games, I see champions in all the different events that we're watching. And, you know, we're cheering for Team USA all the way.
Definitely cheering for Team USA all the way. I like track and field. I like all track and field events, as I mentioned earlier. You know, the body in motion, and you know, watching a world class sprinter or runner compete is just something that's pretty phenomenal. And then I also, you know, I mean, obviously like cycling as well, swimming, but you know, anything with Team USA and what we mentioned, just memorable finishes, good battles, good fights. You know, great wrestling matches. I mean, anything. It could be everything from archery to volleyball. As long as it's Team USA competing, you know, I'm cheering.
Now, you both were in 96 and 2000,
yes.
The same Olympics at the same time. One, of course, was in Atlanta. Was it extra special to have that in the United States?
Well, it was extra special. I didn't do extra well. So from that point of view. But the thing about the Atlanta Games was that it was in a city, and we didn't have the village. Normally, they have a village where we go, and we all the athletes, all the countries are in that same space. So for me, it wasn't that special in that I didn't perform up to my abilities. And there was some other things that happened with the bombing and things like that that kind of put a damping on it. But for you.
Yeah, well, I was, you know, won a medal in Atlanta, won a silver medal. But with it being in the United States, there's also a lot of pressure, you know. Mm. And, you know, that's one thing I will say. I won in that Games, you know, I was world champion twice already, and I was only 20. Maybe 3 or 4 years old, and so there was a lot of pressure, and there was a lot of people expecting you to win, and you wanted to win yourself, and you had family and friends there and sponsors there and everything else, so there was pressure, but it was also very, very special to have your friends and family there as well. So it was, to me, Atlanta was a great Games. I really enjoyed the experience, and it really set the tone for the rest of my career, because losing that gold in Atlanta was really made me into just a completely different athlete.
Was there anything you learned by going back to the Olympics? Because you had the opportunity to participate in many Olympics. Did it get kind of easier each time you went out?
No, it never gets easier in my sport, because you have to qualify, and they only take 3 people. So no matter how good you are, they don't say, oh, Joette has been to 2 already, just put her on the team. You have to show up and race. And so when I talk to kids, it's about preparation. And on that day, are you prepared? And so I always tell Talitha, It doesn't matter what they did before. What matters is what they do when they are in competition. So, no, it didn't get easy. And I got older. I was 38 years old, my last Olympic team, and I still, you know, was able to beat the younger people.
Yeah. Marty, how about you?
I mean, for me, it got harder. You know, after after 96 and the run into 2000, I just pushed myself that much harder and just knew I had to be that much better to go into Sydney and win convincingly. But, I mean, an interesting fact for me is, you know, I never walk into opening or closing ceremonies at any Olympic Games. So there were some experiences I look back at now and think, wow, I probably missed some of the Olympic experience as an athlete, but one thing I can say is, you know, I've always walked in the awards ceremony, which was something
that
was really, really, which is really special. But the Olympics, as I said earlier, you know, it's just such a special event. And, you know, I meet new Olympians and I just have incredible respect and honor for them because I know how hard it is and how tough it is to go through the trenches. Not everybody sees the difficult work that goes in every single day. And there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that go into, you know, being an Olympian and then also trying to win a medal. Yeah.
And the tough thing is having kids, too. Like, Talitha, I tell you, he doesn't have to be an Olympian, but be the champion of your life. And I think that as parents, we have to make sure that, you know, at our level of training, everyone doesn't have that. I don't want to discourage her. I want to encourage her to maximize her talent in the classroom and also in sports.
Yeah. Well, Joetta, Marty, and Talitha, thanks so much for joining us. Continued success with your programs away from the Olympics, and enjoy the Rio Games coming up.
We'll watch it from these shores.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
All right. Our special in-studio guests, Marty Nostein, Joetta Clark-Diggs, and Talitha Giggs. A quick reminder, of course, too, Joe Craig is on vacation. He's on another cruise, believe it or not, so he will be back next week. And we're not having trivia tonight. We want to give all these people a little extra time to talk about their special experiences. So next week, we'll be back with another trivia game for you to win the special prize. Up next, we have a special guest from our Washington Bureau, George Washington, Jacob Williams, will be coming up in just a moment. And next week, we will have an NFL draft preview show featuring beat writers from both the Eagles and from the Redskins on next Thursday's edition of RCN Sports Talk. Time for our final timeout of the evening, and the Parkland boys volleyball team, now ranked first in the state, weathered a tough test against Liberty this past week. Our Sports Talk cameras were on hand for highlights and for post-match reactions.
We've been playing well. You know, I'd like to see us get a little more consistent in our level of play. Every given night, we play well at certain points, and then we have some lulls. I'd just like to see us kind of hit those peaks and stay with it for the most part. But, so far things have worked out in our favor in terms of the matches and the tournaments we traveled to. But, it's a long way until the end of the season.
It's actually been a little bit of a rocky start. Although coming into this match, we were undefeated. We really didn't have a lot of sets where we played with our full starting lineup. We had a few guys down for various reasons. We're just starting to get everybody on the court together now, and so hopefully we can gel and continue to get better throughout the year and, you know, hit our peak at some point close to the end of the season.
It's a match against two good teams. Liberty's been playing well all year, and, you know, they haven't had many times to play with their full lineup, and I think they finally got to tonight, and, you know, I think we saw the potential of what they really have.
I thought it was a good match. You know, I thought that our guys came out and competed against a very good team. They're every bit as good as their ranking suggests, and, I think ultimately we did get beat by a better team.
Clearly, you know, Liberty's up there, you know, right near the top. Mays has been playing well. They have a couple other matches that we need to stay focused on, you know, one match at a time, and, you know, when the postseason gets here, we'll take care of it then.
I give a lot of credit to Parkland. You know, they've got a lot of veteran players who've got big game experience, and they proved tonight why they are the number one team in the state. Hopefully we prove that, you know, we can compete at that level. And like I said, I don't think we're that far off. I think we got to fine tune a few things and continue to work hard. And, you know, we'll see what happens later on down the road.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk. We're very happy you could be with us again this evening. Our special guest for this segment is Jacob Williams, outstanding senior right-handed pitcher with the George Washington University baseball team, having a great year with the GW team. Jacob, thanks for joining us on Sports Talk this evening.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I want to start by asking you about the weather a little bit, because you've been traveling around. You have the benefit, of course, of going down early in the season into Florida and South Carolina and Texas and playing in a lot warmer climates. Then, of course, you come up here and people in the East Coast know it's been a very interesting spring weather-wise. But how has the first couple months of the season gone, and how have you adjusted to changing climates?
Yeah, it's going pretty well. Obviously, whenever you can start off in the warmth, it's always a nice thing to have. I mean, major league teams, they obviously go down to the warm climate too to start. So that was definitely nice to get a good start down in Florida and Texas. As you said, coming back here, it's been a little bit of an adjustment with the weird cold weather. But at least, I mean, we're playing in the teams we play, they've got to play in the same weather too. So we've kind of adjusted to it. It's kind of something to get used to, and hasn't been too horrible. I mean, we've had colder beginnings of the season, so it's kind of something we just kind of had to adjust to and kind of get over, and hasn't been too bad at least.
Would you agree the pitchers have the advantage when it's cold weather?
I don't know. It's kind of a debate we actually have on the team. Yeah. As a pitcher, I'd say no. It's kind of tough to throw, but the hitters also say it's pretty tough to hit in the cold. So it's kind of a funny debate we have amongst each other about who actually loses when it's really cold. But
yeah. Before I ask you about this year, I want to go back to last year a little bit. Of course, one of the big highlights for your team was the A-10 championship, and you were the winning pitcher in your 11-5 win over Fordham to clinch the championship. Had an outstanding game, pitched 8 1/3 innings, no walks, and 4 strikeouts in that game. What was it like to win an Atlantic 10 championship and play such a huge role in the clinching game?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely an exciting game. I mean, it kind of went out there just knowing we had to win to keep advancing. So that was definitely kind of what I had in mind. I wanted to just put us in an opportunity to win, and I kind of did that. So that's kind of just the mentality I had to have. If we lost, go home kind of thing. So that was exciting. And to have it at our own field, our home field, to have that kind of big game and have a win like that was definitely an exciting thing, and it kind of helped us become even hungrier for this year to really want to win. Obviously we're not hosting it this year, but as a senior it makes me even hungrier to really want to win it this year. So yeah, it was definitely cool to kind of get that little taste of success in last year, but then make us want it even more this year.
And when you look at this year's the balance in the A-10 is just incredible. I mean, you look at the conference now, St. Louis, VCU, Davidson's there in first place, but you and a bunch of other teams are like a game or two behind them, and the standings are incredibly bunched together. And even the teams at the bottom right now, George Mason and LaSalle, they have 10 wins apiece, I believe. So, and you have some really good players in the league. So how did you look at this season with so many good teams and so much talent available to play night in and night out?
Right. I mean, the Atlantic 10, as you said, is definitely very competitive. It's very crucial to not look too far ahead. You got to take each game by game, each weekend by weekend. We're definitely not looking ahead to any series past George Mason as we have coming up, just because anybody can win any given game because the balance is right there. Even the so-called bottom teams really aren't bottom teams. They can win, beat anybody. So it's definitely important to just go out and try to do your best to win that game that day, because if you look too far ahead, then before you know it, you're falling into the bottom team, even though you may be more talented. So with everybody being so close and jumbled together, you got to take each game by game.
Now, I know there's a lot of advantages of playing in a big conference like the Atlantic 10. One of the things for baseball, though, that's a little bit of a disadvantage is you don't get to play every team in your league each year. You don't get to play home and home. It's just realistically impossible to kind of do that during the course of a college baseball season. Was there ever a year or even this year where you're kind of disappointed that you didn't get to see a team, or has you and your teammates talked at all about, you know, it's tough not seeing each team each year?
Yeah, it's definitely something you kind of you adjust to and you kind of pay attention to when the schedule gets released each year. After maybe my fourth year, I've had the opportunity to go to every Atlantic 10 school, I think, so far, which has been cool to get to see every other field and every other school. But obviously there's some teams that are kind of, a little better to play. And obviously the top teams, you get stacked against a lot of those, it's kind of tougher. But it's kind of the luck of the draw, who you get playing in your conference schedule that year. And obviously it makes it a little easier versus other teams. So you kind of just got to go out week by week and try to win your series because you never know. Like I said, it's kind of luck of the draw, so you can't really expect too much.
Yeah. Our special guest this segment is Jacob Williams, outstanding right-handed pitcher in his senior year with the George Washington University baseball team. Jacob, I'm told that you were had an interesting internship last year. You were a baseball operations intern with the Washington Nationals last summer. I know there's some great peoples in the Nats front office. What was that like, and could you kind of take us through some of the experiences of that internship and working for the Nationals from the front office perspective?
Yeah, that was an incredible opportunity I was given last summer, and really cool experience for me to spend my summer here in D.C. Working with Nationals and being around baseball day in and day out every day, from helping with different things from the draft to helping with different projects with the team. It's definitely cool. It was very hands-on. I got to do a lot. I got to got to watch a lot of Nationals baseball games, which obviously as a baseball player and someone who's been consumed with baseball my whole life, that was an awesome experience. And it actually led to me getting another internship for this upcoming summer with their single A team up in Auburn, New York. So definitely was a very cool experience and very thankful for the opportunity they gave me. And I'm hoping to maybe continue working with them. So
yeah, that would be great.
That'd be great.
Yeah, I know one of the things too, one of the things I was reading about that you did was you were in the war room when they go through the drafting process. And of course, you're going to be eligible for the draft this summer as well. So you're really getting an experience and an opportunity, creating opportunities for yourself, both playing in the game and for life after baseball as well. Could you kind of take us through what your thoughts will be with that summer internship and what your thoughts will be once the draft comes out? Obviously, you'd like to play, but you know, you're kind of becoming well-rounded and it can go in either direction, regardless of what happens this summer.
Right. I mean, obviously, playing baseball at kind of a high level, I mean, that's what me and all my teammates are working towards. All of us want to get drafted and continue playing if possible. But at the same time, you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. I mean, you definitely don't want to bank on that and 100% count on that happening, because a lot of people play college baseball and very few get to make it to the next level. So, I mean, you can work very hard towards it and still not be given the opportunity. So trying to kind of set up some other plans and hopefully continue working in the game if I can't continue playing any longer. So I feel like it's kind of good to have other options in case different things don't work out.
Mm-hmm. Now, looking back at your career, obviously the A-10 championship was a big moment, but were there any other moments that stand out either for you personally or as a team during your experience at GW that really stand out in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, as a freshman, I mean, coming in, obviously college baseball is a big adjustment versus high school baseball, but my freshman year, we were able to make the A-10 tournament and win a game there, which is the first time we'd done that in a few years. So starting my collegiate career off with that was definitely an exciting time. And then we've also had quite a few successful years and different big wins. I mean, last year we knocked off Maryland when they were ranked at Maryland. That was very cool. Big game for the program to beat a ranked team like that. So, I mean, anytime we can have team wins that are big and kind of help build the program like that, I think it's definitely crucial and it's definitely exciting for us.
Before we let you go, you mentioned you have George Mason coming up this weekend, Townsend, Georgetown, and Dayton, some of the games coming up. But can you give us a little insight on that matchup? You're hosting George Mason this weekend. Any keys or things you'd need to do to have at least a series win this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we've been off to a pretty good start so far in A-10 play. And I think, our hitters have been definitely helping carry us, been hitting pretty well. So then continuing to put up runs obviously takes a lot of pressure off all of us pitchers, and it helps us just continue to go out and kind of throw strikes and do our job. So as easy as that kind of sounds, everybody kind of working together like we've been doing, being very well-rounded, it's kind of going to be the key. And definitely taking it game by game, as I said, because they're definitely not an easy team. And being our kind of local rivals, it's always a tough game to go out against them. So it's definitely an important series, and it's going to be fun, but it's going to be crucial to go out and play well against them.
Yeah, should be a great weekend of baseball and should have some nice weather too.
Definitely hoping so.
All right. Jacob Williams, thanks so much for joining us. Continued success to both you and to the George Washington baseball program, and good luck this summer.
I really appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me.
All right. It's our pleasure. Jacob Williams, outstanding pitcher for the GW baseball team. Kind enough to join us for a few minutes here on RCN Sports Talk. That'll do it for tonight's program. A big thank you to all of our special guests. And we'll be back next week with another live edition of RCN Sports Talk. For everyone at RCN, I'm Chris Michael. Good night, everyone.